at me with watery blue eyes like an elderly vulture contemplating a wildebeest that's just made the terminal mistake of drinking from a poisoned watering hole. My stomach feels like ice, but the sense of gathering outrage at the back of my head is like a red-hot band. As I see them watching me with varied degrees of expectancy, I feel a flash of raw anger. I press my hands down on the tabletop because I really feel like punching somebody in the face, and that wouldn't be the right way to handle this situation. "You have no need to know," I say as firmly as possible. Harriet's smile slips first. "I'm your team leader," she says sternly. "You aren't in a position to tell me what I need to know." "Fuck that," I stand up. "Minute this, if you're going to start writing it down. I want it noted that I deny all accusations, that my actions are justified. I am not going to be party to a procedural lynch mob held on spurious grounds. You don't have need to know, and I don't have permission to tell you. If you want to take this further, I insist that you take it up with Angleton."
"Angleton?"
Now Bridget's smile has slipped too. Eric is blinking rapidly, confused. I pick on him. "Let's put this on Angleton's desk," I say soothingly. "He'll know what to do with it."
"If you say so."
Eric looks uncertain. He's been around so long that he doesn't have to imagine the reasons behind Angleton's mystique. He knows. He almost looks afraid.
"Come on."
I grab the papers off the table, yank the door open, and march out. Behind me, Bridget protests.
"You can't."
"I bloody can," I snarl over my shoulder, speeding up to a trot as I head for his basement lair. "You bloody see if I can." I've got a fistful of accusations and a startled Harriet flapping after me. That's all I need. Fucking departmental politics. See where it gets you. Angleton's outer vestibule. The door gapes open. I barge right in, startling the spotty young geek who's threading microfilm between the Memex's rollers.
"Boss,"
I call. The inner door swings open.
"Howard, we were just discussing you. Enter."
I slide to a halt on the green carpet, in front of the great olive-colored metal desk. I hold up the papers. "Bridget and Harriet," I say.
"Oh, and Eric."
Andy leans against the wall next to Angleton's desk and whistles quietly.
"You sure know how to make friends and influence people."
"Silence, please."
Angleton leans forward.
"Miss Brody, may I ask what you're trying to pin on our young friend here?"
Bridget parks herself on the other side of the desk from Angleton and leans over him.
"Violation of departmental procedures, security breaches, misuse of internet access, poor timekeeping, absence without official leave, breach of protocol, and abusive behavior toward a superior amounting to gross misconduct."
"I see."
Angleton's voice is cold enough to freeze liquid hydrogen. Out of the corner of my eye, I find Andy trying to catch my eye. He seems to be twitching his cheek in Morse code, telling me to keep my mouth shut.
"He's a loose cannon,"
Bridget insists, in a Thatcheresque tone of total conviction.
"He's a menace. Can't even fill out a timesheet accurately."
"Miss Brody."
Angleton leans back, looking up at Bridget across the expanse of his desk. That's odd. Why is he relaxing, I wonder? He holds something up.
"You appear to have overlooked something."
The thing in his hand is small and walnut-colored. A tuft of hair sticks out of one end of it, bristly and dry. Bridget inhales sharply.
"Howard works for me now. He's on your budget allocation, I agree, but he works for me, and you will henceforth confine your relationship with him to issuing monthly payslips and ensuring that his office is not accidentally reallocated, unless you wish to wind up emulating the fate of your illustrious predecessor."
He jiggles the thing in his hand. Bridget's eyes are fixed on the thing. She swallows.
"You wouldn't."
"My dear, I assure you that I am an equal opportunity executioner."
"Eric."
The elderly security officer shuffles forward.
"Please remove Miss Brody from my office before she makes me say something I might regret."
"You bastard,"
she snarls as Eric places a hand on her shoulder and urges her away from the room.
Just because you think you can go outside channels and talk to the director, don't let that fool you.
The door shuts behind her. Angleton puts the wizened thing down on his blotter. Do you think I'm bluffing, Robert? He asks me, his tone deceptively mild. I swallow. Uh-uh. No way. Never. Good. He smiles at the shrunken head before him. Something the pen-pushers never seem to get straight. Don't threaten, don't bluff. Isn't that right, Wallace? The shrunken head seems to nod, or maybe it's just my imagination. I take a deep breath. Actually, I was meaning to see you. It's about Alan. Angleton nods. He took 500 rems, boy. They tell me that 10 years ago that would probably have been fatal. Has anyone told Hillary yet? Andy coughs. I'm going round there in a couple of hours. My expression must be skeptical because he adds, Who do you think was best man at their wedding? Oh, okay. I feel an enormous letdown, as if some tension I'd barely been aware of has been released. Well then, that's the main thing. Not really. I glance back at Angleton. There's more. Bad timekeeping. He looks contemplative. So, you visited Alan first off, then came into work. I'd say you've done a full day's work today already, Howard. Better go home before you're too late. Home? Then I realize. How long has she been back? 2 days. His cheek twitches. Better hope she isn't angry with you. As I stick the key in the front door lock, I look up at the roofline, both infinitely familiar and strangely alien. I've only been away 1 week, I tell myself. What can have changed? The front hall is full of petite tank tracks. They're about 20 centimeters wide, covered in dried-up mud, and they run past the hulking Victorian coat rack and the living room door to stop just short of the kitchen. I stumble between them as I close the outer and inner doors, try to find somewhere to stow my bag that isn't covered.